हरे ओम सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
This is now in the text. In the,
it's not in the file.
It's not in the file, okay. So this is was a point that we had come up in the in metaphysics. This would be a is a footnote or is a footnote, okay. The Shankya's metaphysics is based on the theory of causation known as Satkaryavad. Right? Because causation is like how things are caused, who, what's causing what, who's involved in what. You know, like we have the four phases, but we see two are the actual transcendental forms and two are the material forms, reflection of that. You know, in other words, the Purusha and Prakriti. But then it's replaced by the Jiva thinking he's the Purusha, and the spiritual form being replaced by the external form is the Prakriti. Right? And then what's his name? Aristotle. Then he has similar, but he somehow or another doesn't break into the transcendental. Right? So he has the material energy, he has the what's efficiently getting it done, then the, I can remember, the forms and the absolute, what it turns into or something like that.
Formal cause.
The formal cause, the absolute. He used the same terminology. But for him, the formal is just the forms. Mm. You know, there's the energy, then there's the forms themselves changing, as opposed to that the energy is the forms. You know, somehow he divides it. So in other words, he's having to get four things out of two instead of the natural four that's there because he doesn't accept the spiritual. Mm. So here, there's a theory of causation known as the Satkaryavad. According to this theory, the effect, karya, exists in the cause prior to its production as an effect. Right? In other words, you have what causes it, it's already there before it's produced. Right? Because it was making that point, was that the gross is coming from the subtle. Right? So that means is when the gross is manifest, it carries the same qualities that are found in the subtle. It may not have all, but it has those. Just like, let's say, you have an architect. And so you can say, oh, this is typically his kind of architecture. Sometimes it even gets a name, you know, because it has qualities that he always, you know, looks for. It's either really weird or it's very simple or it's very classic or something is there, so it identifies it like that. So you can see the cause in the effect. So they're making the point is that prior to the production of the effect, it's already exists in the cause, right? For example, by the activity of the potter, an effect is produced, pot, which exists implicitly in the clay. This view is based on the following grounds. In other words, if the clay can't do it, it's not going to manifest. Does that make sense? It means you can't deal with something if it doesn't have the ability to turn into that. You know, like that. If the effect was really non-existent in the cause, then no amount of effort on the part of any agent could bring it into existence. It is impossible to turn blue into red or sugar into salt. Thus, the activity of the agent is only meant to manifest the effect, pot, which exists implicitly in the cause, clay. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. The cause can produce only that effect with which it is causally related. It cannot produce an effect not connected to it. But it cannot be related to what does not exist. Therefore, the effect must exist in the cause before it is actually produced. Yeah. In other words, it's not that it's related to something that doesn't exist and therefore it'll exist. It has to be related to something that does exist.
Right? Mm.
They
want to
prove
what that does not exist?
No. And here they want to... That may be one of their effects that they use it, but that's not actually the main principle. I think this is just a principle how they function. That's just a side thing, because we see the original Shankya did accept the position of God. And then just as it developed, it became non-theistic. Right? Because technically, why we're defining in the six schools the Shankya as non-theistic, because theistic Shankya is Vaishnavism. It's just the analytical aspect of how you view the world. Mm-hmm. That aspect of it, that's Shankya. So it's a portion of Vaishnava, tradition, theology. So that's why then we would discuss it, because the six are, in this way, the bogus, right? Because even Vedanta, you have the bogus of Shankar, right? Where they take Vedanta, but they don't apply it theistically. Theistic meaning, yeah. Means, in other words, if we don't accept God as a person, it's technically not theistic. Even though if you accept as Brahman and Paramatma. Mm-hmm. Because the point is you're not accepting the whole position of God. Yes. Like that. Though it's, what do you call it? It's agnostic or Gnostic. Which is it? Gnostic.
Gnostic, yeah.
Gnostic. It means it's not against God, it's not. So. Because in here is that even if you do it, that means, in other words, the system works if they're only focusing on the material and it's only through the material. It's still, according to their theory, would work whether there's God or not. So it's not necessary to go out of their way to say there's no God. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It would work anyway. Okay. So here is that they're just trying to say is that, in other words, you're going to do something, but you can only do those things which actually are inherent in the origin of what you're doing, what you want to accomplish. Because ultimately then that would mean then that it would have to also mean that therefore the state of their, liberation is inherent also. Because then that has to come down. Otherwise, how do you get back to it? It also then, this would establish that without the law, you can't just, this idea of the mode of ignorance where you just know whatever you feel like doing. But the point is that what does that have to do with what effect you're trying to get? Mm. I feel like this, I want that. But if what I feel is not inherent in what I want, it's not going to happen. That's why then you have to follow the laws.
So no bathtub to Calcutta.
Yeah, at least not on Friday. Maybe Wednesday night. That's bath night, right?
Yeah. Bath night.
The fact that only a potent cause can produce a desired effect shows that the effect must be potentially contained in the cause. There's also the importance that the cause has to have potency. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that. It means material energy has potency, but then they kind of forget, where does potency get its potency? Yes. That's the weakness in the non-theistic. Yeah.
So this means that there is some cause who have no potency?
No, there can't be.
No, it's automatically potency.
Yeah, means every cause has potency. Yes. The potent cause of the effect is that entity which possesses some power which is related to the effect, which is not possible if the effect does not exist in some form. This means that the effect exists in an unmanifested form in the cause prior to its manifestation. Mm. Right?
Did we skip point three?
I thought it was reading point three.
Maybe you have a different version, but...
No. It means I read the first sentence, then he asked a question, then I continue with four. So does that mean because there was an effect and there's that potency in the cause? It means something in the way he's thinking then caused it to move to the fourth, so that means he's on a more advanced level, so it moved forward, or, you know, what does this mean? What's the cause here? Okay. We see only certain effects can be produced by certain causes. Curd can be obtained only from milk, and a cloth only out of threads. This shows that the effect exists in the cause. Otherwise, any effect could be produced by any cause. It means you could do anything and get anything. Mm. You know, like that. You know, it's like, you know, hey, it's almost time to go out tonight and all that, and the cars and the things, so I'm going to go into the kitchen and whip up a new car and, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, and then the other one says, no, don't worry, I already made one in the bathroom. You know, it's like, you know. So it doesn't work like that. Now, it may sound interesting, but that's called the mode of ignorance. You know, hey, I like that. So that doesn't work. It just doesn't. It means, in other words, the elements have to be there. So we would define that as that you have the formal cause. That already has defined all the different varieties of things that you can produce, right? Mm. By that are connected with a particular quality. See, what's being left out here is that why you would even want to do that, right? Because the thing is, if it's coming from material energy, there's qualities you're trying to obtain. And since they're trying to attain, you know, that nothingness, so therefore... There's not going to be the need that the quality is the highest element, because they're trying to take it that material has qualities, therefore you stop dealing with the material, therefore you get rid of the qualities, therefore then you merge. You know, you just become, you know, on that peaceful state of whatever it is that they call it. You know, does that make sense? So the point is that there's a quality. That quality can only be manifest through certain forms with certain activities. Though some have many varieties, some have less varieties, or at least ones that, you know, we would appreciate. So that's already there before it even can be done. So in other words, those are inherent already. Then you have the material cause that if you, as the efficient cause, deal with it properly, according to those rules of engagement, then you can produce that manifestation. Right? But the material energy can only manifest what is already there in the formal cause. Because the material energy is just a reflection of the formal cause. Right? The external is only a reflection of the internal. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. In other words, you know, if you... By reverse engineering, then you can show that all this is just in our philosophy, and then they just, you know what I'm saying? So everything is there in the philosophy, it's just you come up to a point and that's where it ends, but they keep going with it. That's where it becomes problematic.
It seems also a little bit like modern scientists with their nanotechnology and stuff like that. They think they can make anything out of anything.
Yeah, but it's new, this their area, but let's say you take something like, you know, what would you say? The only word that comes to mind is hybridization of the various plants and flowers. Mm-hmm. So they know that if you take things, you can put things together, but when you end up with a purple one, that's it. You can't go farther than that. It means all the combinations have been done, and that's the last one. You can't do anything more with it.
Cross-fertilization.
Hmm?
Cross-fertilization.
Yeah, so that's where it ends.
Mm.
So they already know is you can't just do anything, you know. But because they're going to new thing, the DNA or something else, and that's new, okay, now we can do everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it can't. It's still limited by God. It's just they haven't reached the limit yet.
I'm talking about living forever too. We can overcome death.
Yeah. It's like, you know, and then we can be an old geezer like them. I don't know. Although work that out also. Yeah. But it means on the spiritual platform to be 16 forever would be okay, but on the material platform to be 16 forever, you know. But your kids also look 16, and your grandchildren and your great grandchildren, they all look the same. How do you tell the difference? You know.
There's one author who made like a science fiction novel based on that idea.
Yeah. No, but there is the elders take forms that look elder.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying
Krishna.
Yeah, okay. Novel. Yeah. Good.
In this novel, they all look the same, so it becomes a little annoying, you know. Hi, Bo, and this is your, you know. Well, it's actually my great grandmother. Okay. Well.
That was kind of the point. Yeah. No,
and this one, that's my great granddaughter. Yeah. Okay. Four, the fact that only a potent cause can produce a desired effect shows that the effect must be potentially contained in the cause. Right? It means whatever the cause, that it has the potency to produce it, so it already has to be there. Mm. The potent cause of the effect is that entity which possesses some power which is related to the effect, which is not possible if the effect does not exist in some form. This means that the effect exists in an unmanifested form in the cause prior to its manifestation. Right? So now they're taking the same thing, just a little adjustment, because in this case somebody comes from another angle. But it's, if the effect is non-existent in the cause, then we must say that something comes out of nothing, which is absurd. Like that. I guess that's where a slight difference comes with the quantumist, because everything comes out of nothing. We see that the effect is not different from the cause. Therefore, if the cause exists, the effect must all exist too. The theory of Satkaryavad has two different forms, namely Parinamavad and Vivartavad. That sound familiar? According to Parinamavad, when an effect is produced, there is a real transformation, parinama, of the cause into the effect. For example, the production of a pot from clay or a curd from milk. The Shankya and the Vaishnava Vedanta is in favor of this view. The second form of Satkaryavad, Vivartavad, is accepted by the Advaita Vedantins. They hold that the change of the cause into an effect is merely apparent. When we see a snake in a rope, it is not that the rope is really transformed into a snake. The rope only appears as, but is not really a snake, right? But they still can't explain that there is a snake there and it bites you. You know, it sounds very nice when you just butt down. Yeah. The Buddhists, Jains, and the Nyaya Vaisheshikas accept the opposite theory called Asatkaryavad. They hold that the effect is non-existent before its production. Right? Some of their arguments. If the effect already existed in the cause prior to its production, there's no sense of us speaking of it being caused or produced in any way. The pot already existed in the clay way. Should the potter exert himself to produce it?
So why?
Hmm?
Why?
Oh, why? The pot already concluded in the clay way.
Sounds good.
Why would the potter exert himself to produce it? Moreover, if the effect was already present in the cause, it would follow that it is indistinguishable from the cause and that we should use the same name for both the pot and the clay, and also the same purpose can be used by the pot and the lump of clay. It cannot be said that there is a distinction of form between the effect and the cause for then we would have to admit that there is something in the effect which is not in the cause, and therefore the effect does not exist in the cause. Right? So means it's you have kind of a simplistic element where they're not dealing with the subtle laws and principles that are already there. So you're taking the gross elements, is that, yes, the manifestation of the cause and the manifestation of the effect are different, and you can't say they're the same. But the potential laws, the principles on which they function, that's the same. Otherwise, you couldn't put them together. You know, otherwise the clay and the cloth, you know, should go together. Or anything could go together. That's the problem in the other one, is they're saying then anything could come from anything. Right? So why is it governed that you only get pots from clay? You don't get, you know, something else. You don't get dinner from clay, or you don't you know what I'm saying? Like that. I mean, of course the diorama in the existence gets dinner out of the clay, but you know, not that you would want to really have much to do with it.
Don't actually eat it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the point. He never actually eats it, so maybe that's the point. So Buddhists, Jains, and the Nyaya Vaisheshikas.
It's funny that that example is used, because when Krishna eats clay, he makes the same argument that, just like all the, I think it was Nimai, but the sweetmeats are all coming from earth, and this is all earth too, so what's the difference?
Yeah.
She defeats him.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah, so in other words, they're working on more external here, right? Because it sounds very obvious there, because according to that argument, then it sounds very logical, right? It means if they're coming from the same thing, then you should be able to, and the effect is there, so it has the element within it, so therefore you should be able to use it in the same way. But there, that is there, as you can say, is that, yes, the earth is there, and it produces, you know, the food, and it produces the clay, but the point is the food you can put back on the earth, and it'll turn back into the clay. You know, so that element is common, but the point is that the effect, in other words, the elements of nourishment, but it's in a form that you can actually use, while the clay you can't use. If you're a worm, then that is dinner. You know, you don't have to. Worms don't have to do any farming or anything. They just eat the dirt straight. You know, all the kids at lunch, you know, hey, what kind of dirt you got today? Yeah, well, it's a little, like, you know, sandy, you know, loamy like that. Well, I just got straight up front clay. You know, very nourishing. You know. Well, I just got sand. Crunchy. You know. Okay, so that's the causation. Now we are. Okay, so we were discussing about the modes of nature. The gunas are formless and omnipresent when in a state of equilibrium, having completely given up their specific characteristics when thus submerged in each other, right? So the pradhan, so that's there. In a state of imbalance, however, Rajas is said to be the center of Sattva and Tamas, and this results in creation because manifestation in itself is an action. Right? So, but the imbalance means, because you have the element of balance of it all, but that means balance here, page 6, kind of in the middle of the middle paragraph.
Yes.
The living entity is, I mean, we're taking it that pradhan being balanced is the normal state. And so therefore, then we can come to that state. But the point is the material energy in us don't have any, there were nothing in common other than we're both energies of the Lord. But as far as our relationship with each other, there isn't one. There can't be one. It's dead matter. We're conscious. How do you have relationship with something that's dead matter? You know what I'm saying? So the problem comes is that they're going to use this thing, which is true, and you know how it mechanically works. This is true, how it does the mechanics of how it functions. But the problem is why would that be your ultimate destination that you're trying to get to? Right? So the point is why is it out of balance? What caused it to go out of balance? You know, because then again, is it the cosmic cosmic conference, or that one guy that you know somehow or another, or it could be they got together for a conference, right? All the living entities, and one guy was on the side, bumped into something he shouldn't, had started this whole thing like that, you know, and then everybody else, oh no, you know, so.
It's interesting, Maharaj. Christianity had both the one guy and also many conferences also.
Yeah. Okay, so then when sattvic, so when there's when in other words there's action, the rajas is the center. Right, so that makes creation. Right, action depends on motion. The force of that is the very nature of rajas. So sattva and tamas are dependent on rajas to manifest themselves, and that's because otherwise, without rajas, they wouldn't manifest. But the problem is how is rajas manifesting? Mm. You know, why is it rajas is independent to manifest? It's only action, but how did it come into action? So, another, what started the original imbalance? That's not, so that they're not catching. That's the glance of the Lord. So it's the Lord's potency that actually causes material energy to function. But there's somehow another thinking material energy is independent in itself. Mm-hmm. Right? But energy can't function without energetic. That's obvious. But somehow or another, they're not catching that. Though they're saying that you have the cause and then the causation. But they're taking it back. That otherwise there's infinite regression. You keep on going and going and going, and then never end up anywhere. So at some point you have to stop.
Yeah.
So they're just stopping at material energy rather than taking one more step to God and then stopping. Right? You know, and others just, you know, start with themselves, you know, and then don't take that one more step. Right?
Stop there.
Yeah, so it's like...
They say at a critical stage, like a certain amount of mass, they say at a critical stage, then the effect happens, you know, or the dying happens.
But critical stage, of what?
Because the laws of the laws of the universe are, you know, attracting these molecules together, and you know, it's just something.
But where did the laws come from? And how do these laws have potency? Make a law means that there's the potency to do it. Just like the country has laws, that means there's a country to affect the law. Mm. So where did the law come from? And that potency. And they're attracting what? Because according to physics, there was nothing there. You know, everything was compressed into one little thing. Well, what compressed it, you know, in the first place, you know? Because otherwise, for something to come out means you have to put in. Means if we're going to accept, you know, the Newtonian of equal reaction, if the bang that's going out means that there had to be one that went in. So if that's there, then there had to have all gone in at one point. So this is not the beginning of the beginning of this creation. And it goes out for so long, and then it collapses on itself, and then that force of it then creates such a small like this that it blows up again and goes out, you know, and then it goes back, you know, something. But where does, so if it's physics that it has to have, so what energy will create the other, the equal one? So there has to be something of force that's equal to the original bang. You know what I'm saying? But to say all these things, they did this, but where did all that come from?
Well, I mean, what they say, just like we say, God doesn't have a cause, he's the primeval, this also doesn't have any kind of cause. And we don't have to prove it. Just like you're taking this irrational position.
So then they're accepting that they're irrational. Because they're saying, if they're trying to make it equal, and then throw ours out, if they're equal, it means you could throw theirs out.
Yeah.
So they're just as irrational.
Yeah.
You know, the point is they're talking laws and energies. We're talking about source of that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're talking about electricity, and we're talking about the generator. So you can't exactly say they're equal, because we're just saying is that there has to be a source of energy. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they'll say, well, what's the source of the source of it? But that's the point. Is that's the source, means electricity comes out of a generator. It's not like it's, you know, we're not talking rocket science here, right? You know. But the point is now what make the generator, that you could discuss, but that's a different point. But energy has to come from energetic. Right? So that's the point, is that it has to, so therefore there is the, you know, if they want to discuss how God got there, but they have to accept that there is something beyond their theory, beyond the energy. The energy doesn't create itself. It already has inherent laws. But where did that come from? They can only manifest if the electricity is manifest by the generator. Mm-hmm. No? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so easy. So, you know, they're equal to throw the other out. You know, it's just like, you know, there's, you know, Western culture and then there's the Indian culture. And because they're all just the culture of a country, they're equal. So therefore we can throw out the Indian. That's mm-hmm. all. It's the same process. Same academy. Yes.
But then the argument comes that okay, then we can't throw them both out, but the Western science has given us medicine and this and that, and you know, the car and or whatever, you know, they'll say like this.
It also gave us the Dark Ages, the plague, the Inquisition, you know, two great wars, you know, all kinds of nice stuff like that, you know, atomic fallout, the what do you call it? The big ozone hole, what do they call that? Yeah, the ozone hole, it means, you know, yeah, pollution, you know, like that, you know, destabled recession. Like that. There's also, you know, so many other benefits. You know, why, you know, okay, the car, yeah, but you could walk in LA from one point to another quicker than you can drive a car. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, how is that a benefit? Before, by walking, you had fresh air and you got exercise. Now you get no exercise and you have to breathe bad air. And even if you're not driving the car, you get the bad air. Now you could say, now the benefit is because the smog is so great, they close school. And you don't have to go to school on that day. Now that's a benefit. But you can't go out and play.
Unless you wear your...
Yeah. Yeah. No, you can say is they produce those things, but has it improved the quality of life? It's produced facilities. You could say they produce some improved facilities over themselves. You know, in other words, all the guys were, you know, covered with cow dung, you know, and so and their king was not. But now, you know, most people aren't covered with cow dung. So you could say there's an improvement in the environment, right? But improvement of their environment. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, they were already going to India and so other places to get so much stuff. You know what I'm saying? If they didn't have, means like if Europe didn't have the Indian and South America and other places wealth of the world, then they wouldn't have been able to produce those things. So you'd have to say it's because of the Incas that, you know, that Europe could produce so much stuff. You know. So the point is, and they're doing all that to produce the money, but they've never produced, they can't produce as much as what they had then.
Those civilizations, they produced more by following closer to God's laws?
You just see that there, means if you look at the pre-Christian history of any civilization, they were more common amongst them. There's more commonality. So there was something more close. That's why they were getting some effect in some way. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, action depends on motion, the force of activity that is the very nature of rajas. And so Sat and Tamas are dependent on the rajas to manifest themselves and thus produce pairs of opposites. Right? Because we were saying it's the Tamas and the sattva, that's your masculine and feminine principle, so that's where your opposites come in. right? Rajas is just how the two opposites interact, right? Rajas also depends on sattva and tamas, however, because activity cannot be accomplished without the object or medium through which it becomes activated. In the state of manifestation, one guna dominates the other two, but they are never completely apart from each other or completely absent because they are continually reacting with one another. By the force of rajas, sattvic energy evolves with great speed and its unitary energy becomes divided into numerous parts. At a certain stage, however, their velocity decreases and they start to come closer and closer together. With this contraction in sattvic energy, tamas is naturally manifest. But at the same time, another push of the active force, rajas, occurs on tamas, and within the contraction, a quick expansion occurs, right? Therefore, the multiple Big Bang theory. Right. Thus do the gunas constantly change their predominance over one another. The predomination of sattva over tamas and tamas over sattva is always simultaneously in process, right? Because rajas is there, so going one way, so then the sattva will be prominent. But then when the rajas slows down, it goes the other way, it contracts, so then the tamas will become the prominent. But then the rajas acting on the tamas, then again they'll be, you know... The conversion of each of them into the other is taking place at every moment. Right? But because it's complicated, it can keep you very busy thinking about it. Right? But what gets lost is here is why is the rajas, what causes the rajas to put another push? Means if it's always pushing, it would just always expand. So why would it sometimes push and sometimes not? So it expands and then contracts and expands and contracts. Why doesn't it go beyond that expansion? Why doesn't it go beyond that contraction? Why does rajas keep acting? And why isn't it not acting, you know, in a consistent way? Why is there the variety? What causes that variety? So that... This is these things that they don't look at, right? Because they're looking at the cause, but they're not looking at the cause before. And because if the cause here is that there's people, there's relationships, interactions, trying to be happy, trying to, you know, make a nice situation. Now, if all this is coming from something more subtle, the mind and all those things, you know, which explains it, then that comes from the material energy. The point is that means the material energy would naturally have this kind of a thing. But because it's dead matter or unconscious matter, it actually doesn't have the quality that was manifest. So technically, this couldn't come from material energy. Right? Material energy simply has to be what it's made out of. Right? Because from what we're doing back to the mind, okay, and then the mind back to the consciousness, but the point is this... Where does this great thing come from? Because one person is not thinking of it. The individual Purusha is not thinking of the whole creation and all these different amazing things. That's something beyond. So it's not that, well, I'm thinking of this part and you're thinking of that part. Then why do they harmoniously work together? Because if we sit down and work together in something, there's always a fight. So it's not that harmony is the natural element. Right? So it can't be that we've worked it out. You know, so the big conference is not actually going to work because, you know, you can't get two people to agree, let alone unlimited living entities. Right? And one person to have the power to start something like this, you know. Does that make sense? You know?
They say it's the group mind.
The group mind. So you're not going to say it was the particular... means the apple was very, very firm. So when the bite was there, the crunch was so powerful that it started this whole... It means that's if one guy did it, right? You were going to say?
No, I mean they say that it's like... The subconscious, like the group, you know, the
group subconscious.
Yeah, the group subconscious.
Yeah, but why is the group subconscious harmonious? Because if we see, when you put groups together, the psychologists, they love to put groups together and watch how they eventually end up killing each other. Right? You know, that's their fun. You know, it's not that they all work together and work out this thing and then go on to this higher level and all that, and then the psychologist is left there thinking, wow, you know, I missed out, you know. You know, no, this always has to get down to something grungy, you know, so. No? So it's not very practical. You can say in the ideal, but then the ideal means you have to cultivate that. So then that means there had to have been a cultivation of something in which you had this ideal situation of the consciousness of all these persons together that therefore then produced, worked together and produced this material cause. But then where, why would they be doing that? You know. Right. We read this footnote, no? Or we didn't?
No.
No, okay. In the Bhagavad Gita 4.10 it is stated, sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. O son of Bharata, sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and at other times ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there's always competition for supremacy. Well, that was it?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. So, in other words, because there's the Vaishnav form of this Shankya, and that, so we'll see similarities. The problem is when you leave out the God in it, then it becomes, even though it's very nice system, it doesn't actually make complete sense without it. Mm-hmm. Sattva and tamas have the appearance of being in opposition to each other because one is light and weightless and the other is dark and heavy. But these pairs actually cooperate in the process of manifestation and disillusion as things move from subtle to gross and from gross to subtle. The expansion of power stores up energy in some relatively subtle form from which it manifests to form a new equilibrium. These points of relative equilibrium constitute certain stages in the evolutionary process. It might at first seem that there is constant conflict among the gunas, but this is not the case. They are in perfect cooperation during the process of manifestation, because it is through their constant interaction that the flow of cosmic and individual life continues. They are essentially different from but interrelated with one another. Just as the oil, wick, and flame of a lamp work together to produce light, so the different gunas cooperate to produce the objects of the world. The gunas play the same role in one's body and mind as they do in the universe as a whole. An individual's physical appearance is simply a manifestation of the gunas that has been brought about by consciousness. This intention of consciousness to cause Prakriti to manifest disturbs the state of equilibrium in Prakriti, thus causing the gunas to interact and manifest the universe. So if this consciousness is producing it, then that means this interaction is inherent in the consciousness. Right? So then the problem is then if all this creates, what do you call it? A disturbance, then the idea is you have to get rid of consciousness to get rid of the disturbances, right? Because the problems of the world have to come from its subtler form. Mm-hmm. Right. So then here they're putting consciousness above Prakriti, but they were putting Prakriti at the end. Mm. So that consciousness would be produced by Prakriti. Mm. So that seems to be a bit of a weakness there. Yeah.
Buddhi is the first element of Prakriti.
Yes. Buddhi is the first. Okay. Okay. Like, why am I doing this? Okay. In other words, they're working together, but we're just trying to prove one's going up over the other, and each one has its predominance. But they're working together. The gunas are always changing or transforming into one another. This occurs in two ways. Viru paparinama, to change into a heterogeneous state, and sarupa parinama, change into a homogeneous state. Sarupa parinama, the first kind of transformation, takes place when one of the gunas dominates the other two and begins the process of manifestation of a particular objects. This type of transformation or interaction of the gunas with each other is responsible for the manifestation of the world. Sarupa parinama, The other kind of transformation of the gunas refers to that state in which the gunas change internally without disturbing each other. In this state, the gunas cannot produce anything because they neither oppose nor cooperate with one another. This type of change occurs in the balanced state of prakriti. In describing the process of involution, Shankya states that all gross elements dissolve into subtle elements, and finally all dissolve into their origin, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Ultimately, these three gunas also come to the state of perfect balance called prakriti. Then there remains no weight of tamas, no weightlessness of sattva, and no activity of rajas, because the gunas no longer have a separate existence in the sense of predominance of any single attribute. This state, prakriti, cannot be perceived by one's ordinary perception. It can only be inferred. One can only imagine a state in which all of nature is balanced, and there is no levity, no motion, no heaviness, no light, no darkness, no opposing forces, in which the imagination itself, being a product of the mind, is dissolved. Shankya philosophers describe this state as uncaused, unmanifested, eternal, all-pervading, devoid of effect-producing actions, without a second, independent, and partless.
Mm-hmm. But where this thing is obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? Where it occurs, not when, where.
Where it occurs. That you need space.
That's the problem.
So therefore, we go back to the minute infinitesimal point in the Big Bang, I guess. But the fun part is it has no qualities. It has no heaviness, no motion, no light, no dark, no opposing, nothing in that. But it is uncaused, unmanifest, eternal, all-pervading, devoid of effect. So it has all these qualities. So they say these negative ones aren't there anymore. That they could, but these positive ones are all there. But the point is this: what produces, you know, these things? All-pervading, what that means, all-pervading means it has to be going out. Or it's just always there, but it's always existing. So then why would you just say existence? It exists. Right? Does that make sense? But there means within this subtlety, then there's all these things. Because uncaused means that there's nothing to... But the point is all these things went back into its state. So its balance came from all the modes, you know, working on that, what do you call it? That internal kind of thing. But then you get the idea that they're always eternally working that way to maintain the balance. So the modes would have to be always doing their, what is it called? The other kind of... Yeah, Virupa Parinama. In which they are... where was that? They internally change without disturbing each other. But that means then the gunas have to have internal. Right? Because otherwise the guna was just a thing. It was just rajas, tamas. Now they're talking about the guna, tamagun, has an internal state. And the internal state can change. But that means then they always have to be making that internal change to work in that homogeneous state. No? Yeah, I'm sure.
But Maharaj, you can say that maybe it can be, you can understand with the consciousness, the Triguna plus consciousness. The consciousness can describe this state that unmanifested or non-manifested.
Yeah, well, but basically what's happening is that the consciousness goes out. Is actually what's happening. Means, in other words, when everything goes back, means the jivas and all that have to go out of prakriti. So the false ego, time, and the jivas go out of prakriti. So then it goes back into its that homogeneous state.
Yes.
Right? So that's it. But somehow or another, here is that they're not quite catching it, because then where would they go? Then you have to have God. So since they want to end there, then there's going to be some problem there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. So the start of it will be a problem, and why it's going on will be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you know if it is the same definition of consciousness Sankhya philosophy is using, Vaishnava philosophy?
Use of consciousness meaning?
Yes, about the definition.
Where was the definition?
It's not written in the Bible.
Where is that? I don't see it.
I don't think it's written.
No. It's just in the first paragraph, intention of consciousness to go to Prakriti, the relation between consciousness and Prakriti.
Oh.
But I'm just asking myself, is it the same definition of consciousness?
Means, but here it's not being defined here so much. No. It's just saying that consciousness is there, that the consciousness with the gunas then produce the particular form you're in. We'll say the same thing.
Yes. But this means if their definition of consciousness is, we can say, individual and supreme consciousness same time, we can understand it a bit.
The problem is that because they're leaving out God, then how is it that there's rules on which your because of your particular consciousness that'll be connected to certain modes, therefore you have that certain appearance. Mm. Right?
Yes.
That's not being defined.
Yes.
Right? You know, so that'll be right. And in other words, you're always going to end up with some short shortcoming. Okay. So then the footnote. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3.26.10 is stated, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the unmanifested eternal combination of the three modes is the cause of the manifest state, is the cause of the manifest state and is called Pradhan. It is called Prakriti when in the manifest state of existence. Right? It's Pradhan when it's in the state of unmanifest. When it's manifest, it's called Prakriti. Right, so here's eternal combination of three modes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it means Pradhan is eternal. Mm-hmm. Right. The three modes are eternal. Mm-hmm. But it's just a matter of whether they're manifest or unmanifest. You know, in the manifest one. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport.
If I'm sorry, it's very hard to understand their explanations, and when we read our Sankhya, from this third kingdom, it's very easy. So are we conditioned to the way we used to explain the whole thing, or is it just more logical?
No, it's complete, so therefore it makes sense. Because the other one, you're using all these intellectual positions, but they don't add up, because then if you keep following that logic, then it ends up, it doesn't give a good explanation. So for us, it's just very, very, it's very clear. The Vedanta, being the philosophy, it makes some sense. You know, it's just like, let us say, we're used to, you know, like we were saying, that full element of cooking and you know, planning and marketing and preparation and serving and hosting and doing the whole thing. So now if somebody just takes one of those parts, like going to the market, and makes that into the whole thing by going to the market, and you know, by being able to discern what's, you know, good produce and not good produce and all that, and you know, getting proper prices and not, and then having the proper facility to be able to take those things away and all those things, and then you have to have your source of funds and all that. And so all they do is talk about, and if you do all this, then you'll be happy. You know what I'm saying? It even though In the proper understanding, you're going to do exactly the same thing if you're, you know, going to do, you know, host a program and you're going to go to a market to get your goods to cook. But in the other one, it becomes confusing, because why would you do all this? Why would it be there? Where does the money come from? What would be the cause? You know, why those vegetables? Because they don't know. All they know is they have a list. They don't know what you're going to cook. You know what I'm saying? The guy that goes to the market has no idea what the menu is. He can get some idea. Okay, you're buying potatoes, some eggplants, some this, that. So he can come up with some ideas. You know, he knows that you're not, okay, doing, you know,
ice cream.
Yeah. But nowadays, some of the people put together some weird ice cream. You ever heard of gorgonzola cheese with chocolate and ice cream? That's one of the newest, you know.
I heard bacon and eggs ice cream.
Yeah, well, we won't go there.
No.
You know Gorgonzola.
Yeah.
The blue cheese. Blue cheese and chocolate. Somehow or other, it's said to be very good. Yeah. But no, it just doesn't seem like it.
It smells so bad, nobody will ask you for a lick.
Could be. So, but, I mean, if that's the case, then you just get durian ice cream. You know, that's a... You know, you get to walk out on the street, and the police will pull up, you know, put you in their van and drive off with you, all wearing gas masks.
Drive you home.
Huh?
Drive you home.
Yeah, but you might end up in the police station. It's against the law. You can't do nothing public. You can't do durian public. Private, yes. You know, it's like smoking. You can smoke in your house. You can't smoke in public, so... You can't eat durian in public. Eat it at your house. I'm not sure where we were in the conversation. I've digressed quite seriously here.
Complete hearing. The complete.
Oh, yeah. So, therefore, they can't really understand, so they're not able to explain. You know? So that's why it sounds confusing. But if we say, okay, we're going to do a program dinner, we want to cook this menu, so we have to go to the market, we have to get these, make sure that you get good quality, this is how you get it, make sure you know you get this and that, and take the car, and, you know, all these different things. It makes sense. The problem is when you take just part of it. So, in other words, what we're doing here is one is seeing where the weakness is because they've only taken part. At the same time as what the parts they've taken and that they're using properly, then these are the technical things that we will use in explaining, because Shank is part of the philosophy. You know, just like the atomic theory is part of our philosophy. You know, Nyaya is part of it. But it only is a part. It's not the whole thing. They try to make it into the whole thing. That's where the weakness is. You know? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, so for them, planning a menu or this or that or eating or serving, or that's not important. You know what I'm saying? Because all they're doing is marketing. You know. Now, what you do with all this stuff after you've marketed with it, but then, you know, I guess by the time you get home and you've perfectly marketed, then you just merge into Brahman, so it doesn't matter. So you and the potatoes become one, you know, like that, because it's all just part of the original, you know, how you say, prakriti, you know, perfect balance of vegetables, you know, yourself, and you know, the market and everything just suddenly goes, and that's it, I'm becoming realized, and like that. No, it's just, you know, Sandy's come, you know, that's all. Okay, in the purport. The Lord points out material nature in its subtle stage, which is called pradan, and he analyzes this pradan. The explanation of pradan and prakriti is that pradan is the subtle, undifferentiated sum total of all elements. Although they are undifferentiated, one can understand that the total material elements are contained therein. It's undifferentiated, but they're still there. You know, it's just like the bird and the tree. It's all green. You can't see it, but there is a bird and there is a tree. So that means the pradan is all the 24 elements are there, but you can't see them, but you know that they're there. Otherwise, how does it produce? Mm-hmm. Right? Because you can't produce something unless the cause... Yes. I mean, the effect can't be have something that the cause doesn't have. Mm. Right? When the total material elements are manifested by the interaction of the three modes of material nature... The manifestation is called prakriti. The impersonal say that Brahman is without variegatedness and without differentiation. One may say that pradan is the Brahman stage. But actually the Brahman stage is not pradan. Pradan is distinct from Brahman because in Brahman there is no existence of the material modes of nature. Right? Well, pradan has the modes, they're just in an unmanifest state. Mm-hmm. One may argue that the mahatattva is also different from pradan, because in the mahatattva there are manifestations. The actual explanation of pradan, however, is given here. When the cause and effect are not clearly manifest, avyakta, the reaction of the total elements does not take place. And that stage of material nature is called pradan. Pradhan is not the time element, because in the time element there are actions and reactions, creation and annihilation. Nor is it the jiva or marginal potency of living entities, or designated conditioned living entities, because the designation of the living entities are not eternal. Right? Because otherwise someone would say the jiva is coming from material energy, because if you can't come from the spiritual world, you don't even have to come from material energy. Right? Or some just say is life is produced from matter. But the point is those designations aren't eternal, so it can't be the jiva, that his position, because it has an eternal position that's different from that. Means, in other words, his conditioning is all that is the material energy produces. Right? And thus production is temporary, but the jiva itself is eternal. Does that make sense? Yes.
He said that in Brahman there is no existence of the material modes of nature.
Yes.
When they merge into the Brahman, after attaining their goal, whatever, they are there in their, like there's no false ego for them, nothing. So they attained.
There's polluted consciousness. There's no false ego, there's polluted consciousness.
Well, is it not by modes of nature?
No, there's no modes. See, when someone's liberated, they are beyond the material energy. Right, so there is no modes of nature, but the problem is they still have polluted consciousness that I am the controller and enjoyer.
And it's polluted by the ego.
Means it's not by the means. See, there's something before, right? In other words, this is what's the actual primeval sin,
okay.
Right? Is that the living entity thinks that they are equal with God and can enjoy like God, how God enjoys.
And it's coming from?
From just somehow or another the jiva just decides to be the enjoyer rather than to be the enjoyed. It's just a shift in consciousness.
Yeah, disconnect. I think we read in Vedanta psychology there's the three subtle form bodies that we consider mind, intelligence, and ego. But he says there's also a fourth one called karana, deha. And so is this referring to that fourth one, causal?
That I think would be more is the second manifestation of that,
uh-huh.
In that, because in other words, I want to enjoy in this way or that way.
Uh-huh.
You could say, yes, that is the karana sharir, because that's what causes the whole material manifestation anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that your let's say, you have the desire to enjoy separately from God. So that's the original. Then you have the particular, right? Means when it mentions Hridaya Darbalya, right? The weakness of heart. The original weakness of heart is that I'm the controller and enjoyer, I can enjoy separately. But it doesn't have any specifics.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the concept that I could and control things and enjoy things the way I want. Right? You know, in other words, separate from God. I can control how I like. No, but we're controlled. And I can only enjoy if God enjoys, because I'm part of God. Right? The hand wants to enjoy separately, but the hand is controlled by the body. Right? You know, and it can't enjoy. So we have that. So that's before. That's what then drops you from spiritual into material.
And this distorted desire is coming from where?
It's coming. It's just coming from we as a person, just you know, become envious of Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's inherent in the nature of the jiva, is that they're marginal, so they could function either on the spiritual and the material. You know, it's just like the beach. There's water and there's sand. It has both. It's just sometimes you see the sand more, or sometimes you see the water more. But it's both. You know what I'm saying? You know, the ocean, there's always a beach. And where the land meets the ocean, there's always a beach.
So it's inherent in the jivas.
That can happen. It doesn't have to happen, because the natural state is developing love for Krishna, because they're spiritual. Because the material energy is inferior, so it's not natural for the living entity to be involved, but because they're so close, they can be, and they're so small. In other words, the material energy, the spiritual energy is unlimited. The material energy is unlimited. We're 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. So we're right on the edge. So our natural position is to be under the internal, but because we're on the edge, we can see the external. So if we become interested in the external, we become under its control. Does that make sense? Because actually the internal and external are two features of the Surup Shakti. So it's just Surup Shakti. In other words, we're there, and how we deal with Krishna's energy is how she manifests. You deal properly, she manifests as the spiritual. You don't, she manifests as the material.
And the natural question about the, our desire to be independent, again, we desired it once, we felt, experienced, got the experience, came back.
Came back to where?
Back to Krishna.
Okay, yeah.
Came back to Krishna. And then still we won 10,000 of the tip of the hair, and still...
Yeah, but now you're a smart 1,000 tip of the hair.
But can be dull again? Yeah.
No, you won't become dull again. Because before, one is you didn't know. That's one thing. And two, you didn't have prema. Once you get the prema, then you won't do that anymore. Because you're totally absorbed in Krishna.
You didn't have prema? You didn't develop it yet?
No, once you develop it, you won't fall. You can fall from the neutral... See, the prema is not a neutral state. The prema is a statement of, you know, determination. Right? So the neutral state that Brahma-Bhuta means, it's in between. It's not... It's situated spiritually, but it's on the edge. That means it's just over the edge is the material. Because prema is in the other direction.
So it means we didn't have at that before form. We didn't have a particular service, particular...
Yeah, you have, but it doesn't mean that you do with affection.
From the time immemorial, you've been doing something on the spiritual platform without prema. Then one day you decide to fall down.
It's not one day you decide to fall down. I'm happy.
Okay. You decided,
No, it's not a matter of enough. It's a matter of you're dealing with Krishna's energy, but not seeing it, you know, in connection with Krishna. So therefore, you try to enjoy that energy. Mm-hmm. Separately from Krishna. It's just like this. The gopis are in their houses. Right? Okay. So, and their families are there in the houses. No? So, what do they have to do during the day in their houses? Housework, right? And so, but what are they thinking about the whole time? Yeah. And what's their idea? Why are they doing the housework?
Yeah,
they're doing the housework so no one suspects, so that when they disappear at night, no one's looking for them. Right, because if you think, you know, your wife is going to disappear on you, you stay up all night. Right? Does that make sense? You lock the doors, you do stuff. No? So, therefore, for them, doing the housework is simply because, therefore, then they can go with Krishna. Now, what if while doing that housework, you think, this housework is nice, I like doing this housework. You know? That's the point.
It just this concept doesn't sit well.
Because you're looking that you've been eternally doing that. Mm-hmm. No, it's when we're manifest, means that we can see us, we're always existent. But because Krishna's expanding unlimitedly, there's some point in which we are manifest. So we're manifest, then you're put in that situation. And so in that situation, you make your decision. You know, so it's not that you've been doing this housework eternally and not having prema, and everybody else has had prema eternally, and you just go, hey, enough of this. You understand? So therefore, then you see it in this way. But the point is you're looking at the housework as nice. But nice, why? Because Krishna? Because it also still is Krishna. But we're not seeing Krishna in it. So what does that mean? That's material consciousness. So we're already seeing material energy. Though we're still in our spiritual body and dealing with the spiritual energy. But its effect now is material. Does that make sense? Just like here, we deal with something and its effect is spiritual.
Okay. But this primeval sin should come from someone, from association, from...
No, it's from lack of association. Means the point is this: it's you have the choice.
Always.
Yeah. You have the choice. You know what's the cause of? Okay, you know, here you want this one or this one. What's the cause? It's just your own interest. Does that make sense? You know, so it's just a matter of choice. So the jiva makes that choice. So because of that, then one comes under the control of the material energy. You know, so it's carried out like this. Everyone else develops prema. They go back, they go to Goloka, and you come here. And you're the next Lord Brahma. You know? Does that make sense? So depending, I guess, on how much you were absorbed, then that's how many heads you have. You really like your housework? Lots of heads. Then, you know, it was okay. You know, it's a little bit, you know, interesting. Then, you know, only four heads. You know, so. You're not going to get less than four. You know.
And you're not going to get out from here unless you get pregnant?
You're not going to get out of here until you come to the platform that I can function without desiring the results for myself, that I'm only doing them to please Krishna. Does that make sense? That brings you back to that neutral state. That's why Naishkarmya is important, is because that's the practice of doing it, that the result is not for me, it's for Krishna. Right? But the point is that it should be done with that affection for Krishna. Krishna is the shelter, he is the maintainer, he's the... like that, because that makes it dynamic. That's what will take it towards prema. That it's not for me, that's what takes you out of here. Right? So you come to a state where you're interested in Krishna, but it hasn't developed prema, but you're not interested in the material world, so it takes you out of here. That's why these practices are here. Right?
So
that...
So with that, we will come back to the same state we...
Yes, that we come back to the same state from which we left in the first place. And but the difference is before, you didn't have any drive to go beyond what you were at. Now you do. So therefore, then you'll take up the association of the eternal associates, and by their association, then you'll develop that love for Krishna. That's why association of Vaishnavas is the most important. So one didn't take it seriously, that's why one comes here. You take it seriously, that's why you develop prema. So in other words, it's the same thing. What is being asked to do here is no different than one would have to do on the platform of bhava. And the activities are actually no different than you would do on the platform of prema. You understand? So that's why it's always being pointed out, it's the prema that's important. The activities are only to express it. You know, but we get so caught up in the activities. You know, it's either varnashram doesn't matter or varnashram is everything. You know, like that. Does that make sense? Or
so the last one. And if we take it seriously already there in Goloka.
No, not in Goloka. Gokula. Means only with prema can you get into Goloka. Okay.
And if we take it seriously, the first place there.
So yeah, then you develop prema. You don't come to it. No. 9 out of 10 jivas just there take up the good association, develop prema, and go to Golok. 1 out of 10 don't. So we're the winners. But don't worry, when you get back there, they won't go. You know, there's one. There's one of those 10. You know.
You don't have to wear
remember, I was telling you about it.
You don't have to wear a star. Or something.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to wear a little star. Or that. It won't be little special camps. Or something. You know. You know. How you say? I say that. Work is freedom. You know, all those different things like that. But that's interesting, though. If you work in God consciousness, right, or in nice karma, it destroys the material existence. So, in one sense, it was close, but not quite there. They applied it in too much of an external application. Yes.
Raj, description is about the souls who have the eternal relationship with the form of Krishna and Braja Krishna. What about those who are in they manifest?
But what does it matter on one level? What does it matter?
I'm just saying.
It means what does it matter for you?
Trying to understand.
What do they do is that, you know, I mean, you have the heroin addict, he's gone into the bathroom, you know, he's used his needle, now he's a little bit conscientious. What does he do with the needle? Right? You can't flush it down the toilet, mess up the toilet, can't leave it there, some kid will pick it up, and this and that, and they somehow or another are on a more enlightened establishment, they have the thing on the wall that you put the needles into. What do you do? Is that important for you to know?
In terms of...
No, but I'm saying, is it important for you to know? Is it important for you to know? No. So, in other words, understand that this question is kind of like that. Because it has nothing to do with you, so it doesn't matter. The point is 999 times in a day of Brahma, then what's manifest is all of the Vaikuntha realms. Means, in other words, go cool, what we're talking about, means go loka, Vrindavan, manifests here. Right? So, but when we're dealing with Vaikuntha, it means the Vaikuntha planet has manifest here. So it's the same thing. They have their spiritual forms, they have all the different things that they do. You know, like when one of the means like you have Ramachandra and there's Ayodhya. So it's the same thing. There's going to have the eternal associates and there's going to be those who are not. Who haven't come to that platform yet. And so they take up the association, they develop prema for Ramachandra, then they go to, you know, the original Ido. And if not, then they become one of the boys. In a sense, so every realm will have like that. Dwarka is there, it's the same thing. Mathura is there, it's the same thing. You know, and then you have this 24 flavors of Godhead. You know, it means, you know, I say, you know, Keshava, Narayana, Madhava, all the 24. So all the avatars, you know, have those one of those 24 moods. And so then it's just a matter of then from there you develop, that, then you go to that planet. Does that make sense? It's the same principle. Because Gokul means once in a day of Brahma. Vaikuntha means 999 times in a day of Brahma. Is that okay? So in other words, the Vaikuntha opportunities is much more. That's why it's so rare. Because it's only when we say it's never been given before, it means you count one day of Brahma. So it's 1,000 cycles of the yugas. So that is, you know, that's a long time. It's not that in the previous day that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, didn't come in his, full form, just like Krishna. Swayam Krishna came, so Swayam Chaitanya came. And so again it was given. But it means you're talking once at 1,000%. So that's basically, it's only that time. So when that's given, that's what's special. Does that mean? So, in other words, it's something of interest, but always be careful these ones because they don't really have much to do with us. But the principle is the same. It's always the same. Because if Vrindavan's the highest, everything else is an expansion of there. So, as by the rule of causation, it has to have the same kind of principle. The principles are always the same. Just like here, being a reflection of the spiritual world, the principles are the same, how it works and everything. Because here we're saying the modes of nature, but there it's Satchit and Ananda. Right? So Sat will become mode of ignorance here. Chit will be Rajas, you know, and Ananda will be goodness. So it's the same things are making everything work there. You know, so, and sometimes this is more prominent, that's more prominent, but that's all organized by yoga maya. Here, it's the same thing, the modes of nature, but that's mahamaya. But you don't, you make that comparison and showing that it's all you're being asked to do is what they do in the spiritual world. It's not that, oh, this is the same as there, so I can just keep doing what I'm doing here and it's the same. Does that make sense? Because sometimes you say, oh, this is so unnatural, so this and that. No, this is natural. This is what they do in the spiritual world. So we're only being asked to do what they do in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah?
Just to clarify, Maharaj, does that mean that Dwarka and Mathura appear only in one day of Brahma?
No, that means they may appear at their times, but the point is this, it's not Swayam Krishna. You know, like that. But it also may be, if you're taking it from Goloka, then yeah, they would appear a lot at the same time. Because it's a Goloka. In other words, Goloka manifests one day in the day of Brahma. Because then Lord Chaitanya comes in the next, in the Kali Yuga following it. So you get all four quadrants of Goloka, you know, at one time. You know? And then the rest of the time is Vaikuntha.
But it's not a forearm that manifests as like a Yuga avatar. It's another.
It depends. Might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all it is the thing. Point is they do Harinam Sankirtana. By doing it, they go to Vaikuntha instead of going to Goloka.
Mm.
Right? You go to Vaikuntha instead of Vrindavan.
Mm.
So that's all. It's the same process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the deity worship, instead of being Krishna, it'll be, you know, a Vishnu form.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jai Nityai Gaur
Hare Hare.